Welcome to Out With Dan, the podcast that spotlights and examines the voices of LGBTQ+ authors, characters, and our allies. Together, we lift our voices and we tell our stories. I'm Dan White. Join me as I chat with this week's author. Hello, and welcome back to Out With Dan. Today, I'm excited to talk to poet Thomas Neeland. Hello, Thomas. How are you?
Hey, Dan. Doing great. How are you?
I'm good. I met Thomas at the Louisville Book Festival last year, and you were on a panel, I believe, about podcasting. Do you podcast?
I haven't podcasted in a while. It's been a minute, but I think I'm working my way back into it.
Sure. Well, you're on one today, so that's a start. Okay. So there you go. And I think you said you were on an interview earlier today as well.
Yeah, that was a job interview.
Oh, lovely. Well, yeah. Best of luck to you.
Thank you very much.
One of the things I was so impressed about when I met you was your presence, in the moment presence. And I like that. I was very inspired by that. And I think I told you when I met you that poetry is not my forte, and it is something that I feel like I lack in as far as reading goes, because I don't always understand where poetry is going, and I can't always find that voice, and I think it's fear on my part. So I've asked Thomas if you'll share a couple of your poems with us. Will you read one for us?
Yeah, I'll read one. Yeah. This poem is called Dear Langston and Nicholas. It is in part about the communications between Langston Hughes and Nicholas Guillen, a Cuban poet, and they made some connections during the Harlem, Renaissance era in that time. So, Dear Langston and Nicholas, your letters feel like an inheritance of which I am not worthy. This blackness is a stack of stories wrapped in cane stalks, and I have so many questions about the way my body whispers, how it cries and leaves, how it tries and cleaves to salt-rimmed shore, stains its pores with hot red dust. I was born obsidian, and magma still churns in my core, but your words carry me across the gulf, douse me tenderly along the way, for wholeness to greet me at the bay, softly grip my hands, kiss both my cheeks, and show me who I am, for I am ready to sing.
Oh, I love that. Oh, my goodness. That is amazing.
Thank you.
So where did the inspiration for this come? Reading Langston Hughes?
Some decades ago, Langston Hughes and Nicholas Guillen, again, this popular Cuban poet, Langston would write letters to Nicholas because during the time they were experiencing some of the same things. The idea of double consciousness here in the States, and this idea of negritude, which in the Cuban language equates to just about the same thing, like having to exist as yourself and what was accepted by a superior race at the time. Mm-hmm. In this context, for Guillen was white Cubans versus black Afro-Cubans. And so in reading these letters, I identify with them both because I recently discovered from my grandmother last year that I am also Cuban, or my ancestors are Cuban. And so I've been exploring what that means historically, what that means genealogically. Mm-hmm. And reading the letters to Langston, this one particular letter that Langston wrote to Nicholas, was basically telling him not to be a poet that feeds into the masses, like be your individual self, because that's where your growth is, right? You'll get more out of writing or singing what's inside of you than trying to, create something out of the wind to please other people.
Oh, I love that. I love that. We should all take that into our everyday life.
Yes,
we should. one thing about that I hear, you know, when I hear you read your poetry is I'm a big jazz fan and a big music lover. Yeah. And I think that when I hear you read, it has a sing song to it, but it's your voice that I'm hearing, you know, and I think that sometimes is my fear with poetry is I don't quite understand what that voicing is. So that's why I love hearing someone read their own work, because then you get the author's intent.
That's right. Yeah. I also think, like, you know, I you mentioned earlier, like, this fear, right, of not knowing where a poem is going. I think that's kind of the beauty of a poem, right? You don't have to know where it goes. You just need to know what it feels like.
Oh, lovely. You know? I like that.
And at this point in my life, I wouldn't say that I'm like a super pro. I mean, I think I'm good at what I do, but I think I have some agency here to say, like, it, I think it's more about what you feel than like what it actually means. Because if you feel something, like, you're going to be able to determine for yourself what the poem means to you. But I think that where most people stop at is just like this idea that I can't even read the poem because I'm not going to know what it means. And I think it's natural, right? To because some people think that poetry is like for these people who are way up here. It's not. It's really not. Like, I don't consider myself way up there. Like, I'm like right here, you know? And I think if you just allow yourself to feel it, then it'll do the rest of the work itself for you.
I love that. Thank you. Now I'm going to be on a bit of a mission, and that's a good thing. I think getting out of our comfort zone is always something that's important as well, for growth especially. It's very easy to stay in one box and right. be happy, or one lane and be happy in your lane. But if you don't ever get out of your lane, you may not experience more beauty in your life.
That's right.
One thing I remember you saying in Louisville was that a bit of the tone of your poetry has changed over time. Mm-hmm. Maybe you started out a little angrier. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair assessment of what you said?
There was a time where I wouldn't say I started out that way. I started out more like reflective on like who I am, or maybe who I thought I was at the time. and my first book was very much that, like, introspection, you know, looking at myself and the things that were close in proximity. And soon after, like, after all the, you know, Black Lives Matter, like, after all the outrage and unrest started happening, then I started getting angry, and my poems took a different turn. And I remember that moment that you're talking about, because I was talking about one of my books, and I felt like the poems in that book were, I felt like they were borderline surface level, because they were more emotional than they were, what's the word I want to use? They were more emotional than they were, like, getting to the fact. And now, like, having finished my program and like having grown through the program, I've taken towards a practice of having patience in my writing, and not letting myself be so emotional that I miss the meat of what is trying to happen. I think there's something to be said about, like, sitting with the facts and making logical decisions about them, which then impacts the emotional decisions that you make. And I think Robert Hayden is a poet who is great at that. And that's where I kind of developed that trait from, by reading his work. He wrote a poem called Middle Passage about the middle passage in the slave trade. And he wrote it with such beauty that you wouldn't know that he was upset, right? Because it was beautifully written. And those are the types of poems that I would like to write, because the reality is things are still happening. And I still have things to say, but they need to be written in a way that is, one, received by other people, but also is able to deliver the gut punch that I wanted to deliver. while being beautiful.
I love that. I love that. And I do want to say for the audience that there is a time and place for anger. You know, injustice often brings anger, as well it should, because when people are unjustly treated, we have to fight back, because otherwise we become a doormat. But I do, I certainly do celebrate the fact that you're taking this anger or feel the anger, and then you're channeling it into something that is reflective of you, which is, I think, important for any reader to be able to hear the reflection of you in it. And you mentioned the program, and I do want to highlight the fact that you have finished your Master's of Fine Art at Butler University. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I think that's absolutely magnificent, and it's something I like to see in everybody. Higher education is so important when it's it's available. Did you find that there was very much diversity in races and orientations, or how did that affect your college life?
Yeah. I mean, with the MFA specifically, at Butler, I think they have a pretty diverse community.
Nice.
Not as diverse as I would want it to be, but diverse nonetheless. And something that's probably more important than diversity is equity. And I think Butler does a great job of being equitable.
Nice.
To students. I personally, as a student of color, I would like to see more faculty of color, and that doesn't mean black faculty. That means, black faculty, Latinx faculty, but then also seeing more marginalized groups being represented as well, more women faculty, women of color in faculty, those who identify within the LGBTQ population, right? Making sure that everyone has somebody that they can go to and find the spaces where they can, truly belong.
I love that. Totally agree. It's so important. I think, if you don't ever see yourself represented in life, but especially in education, you will always feel marginalized, because we all look for our tribe, whatever that tribe is, and we can have more than one tribe. We can have multiple tribes, but it's good to be able to see our own selves reflected back at us.
Right.
So I'm happy to hear they're doing a good job. And, we've all got room for improvement, except me, of course. I'm perfect, Thomas, just so we're clear. And anyone who knows me knows I'm far from it. So.
Oh, Lord.
You have a second poem that you'll read for us. Is that correct?
I do. And this poem is actually a reflection of what I was just talking about with, the beautiful poem that delivers the gut punch. I didn't do this on purpose either, so it's kind of worked out that way. This poem is called Why Some People Be Wanting to Erase Us All the Time. And this poem was written after Lucille Clifton's Why Some People Be Mad at Me Sometimes. They list all the things about us they would like to forget, but we record the things about us they do not regret. We were the first of the fearful, locks draping our shoulders like a looming curse. Olive skin ripped us from our sockets, saw us as gold nuggets on the coast to be traded for a ransom that had already been paid. Like a looming curse, olive skin ripped our skin into purple flesh, said God was angry with us for the ransom his son had already paid. We believed every word you said. Our flesh turned darker, thought God was angry. We were sour figs, bruised and beaten, hanging from brittle branches, clinging to every word you said, sola scriptura from the master's table. And we were your beasts, bruised and beaten and burdened, the first of the feared, locks draping our shoulders, golden sculptures on the coast, taken for ransom, fruit for famine.
Jeepers creepers, that is amazing, amazing. And it does deliver as well, Thomas. That is amazing. Thank you for sharing that. Absolutely. You also are a part of something called the Elevation Review. Will you tell us what that's about?
Yeah. So in 2020, at the onset of the pandemic, I founded a literary journal called the Elevation Review. And the initial vision of the review was to amplify the voices of underrepresented writers across the country and the globe. Since then, we have published over 500 poets and their poems from all over the country. I mean, sorry, all over the globe, from Saudi Arabia, from Korea, from the UK, select places in Africa, the United States, of course. But we wanted to India, we wanted to give students, not sorry, not students, wanted to give writers the opportunity to express themselves and to have a space where their poems can live. And so we've been doing that for the past 4 years now.
So how do we find the Elevation Review?
Yeah, it's very simple. You just go to theelevationreview.com.
Perfect.
We are also on Submittable. We are currently accepting submissions for our spring and fall issues. We are doing print issues once a year in the fall. We released our first print issue this past October, where we featured Black poets for our first issue. And it was absolutely amazing. I think I have a copy of it right here just to show you on the screen.
Yes, I love it.
I think I do. I should. It was here yesterday. So
welcome to my world.
So this is the print issue.
Oh, I love that. That's beautiful.
Yep. And the inside is really cool because we have implemented using like dark pages, and then we have the standard white pages in there.
I like it. I like it. And Thomas, what about you? Do you have a website or social media you would like to share?
I do. My website is thomasneeland.com. And I am on Twitter at Tom or X, formerly known as Twitter. At Thomas Neeland, Instagram at Thomas Neeland Poetry, Facebook Thomas Neeland, LinkedIn Thomas Neeland, TikTok Thomas Neeland Poetry.
I love it. So that means you have a bit of a presence, and that's what I like.
I would love to think so. That's right.
Lovely. Well, Thomas, thank you so much for joining me and sharing poems. They were absolutely magnificent, and I hope you the very best of success.
Thank you so much, Dan.
Hang on for me just a second.
Thank you for joining me for this week's episode of Out with Dan. You can find more information about this podcast and its host at outwithdan.com, on Twitter at @outwithdan, and on Instagram and Facebook at @GoOutWithDan. This podcast is hosted by Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, and the theme music is provided by bensound.com. Join us again soon for the next episode of Out with Dan.